Welcome to the Balanced Wellness Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Courtney Ciccoletti, your pharmacist turned functional medicine practitioner and integrative nutrition health coach. I'm on a mission to help others find alternative solutions to the chronic issues that far too often consume our lives. Balance is an individual journey that looks different for everyone. So on this show, I sit down with other leaders in the wellness space to discuss ways you can achieve it. We tackle topics like recovering from chronic illness, developing habits to improve mental health, and even how natural remedies like CBD can help aid in the healing process. It's time to find a solution to balance your wellness. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I am here with Dr. Keith Ellis. He is a scientist and associate professor of medicinal chemistry that is dedicating his time, energy, and talents to helping people recover from long COVID. Dr. Ellis is using his knowledge, expertise, and experience in medicinal chemistry, pharmacology, and natural products to research the biological mechanisms that cause long COVID and the potential therapeutic mechanisms that can help people recover. Welcome, Keith. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.
I know. I'm so excited to dive in because this is like such a topic that I see in so many people. I've seen it in the pharmacy over the past 4 years. I see it with my functional medicine clients. A lot of times people don't even know what long COVID is until they come with symptoms. And then it's like, okay, let's start to uncover some of this. So how, as you know, a medicinal chemist, where did you, why long COVID? Like, I mean, it's so interesting. So that had to be like the start of it, right? Yeah. Like just wanting to know more.
Sure. So kind of what I do as a medicinal chemist, as a professor, is I do what I think of as early stage lead discovery. So I'm kind of that person in the scientific ecosystem that takes a lot of the biology information, a lot of information about disease states, and I drill down and I try and look for what we call molecular targets, right? Kind of proteins in the body that we can develop a drug against and actually help people get better. I tend to like to do projects where I pick new molecular targets and then I find new small molecules, new what we call hits and then leads to actually try and start to discovering and developing drugs. That's kind of what I like to do. It's what I'm interested in. That's been my kind of academic work my whole career. So in early 2023, you know, COVID had been around for a few years. Long COVID was around and starting to kind of be a real problem that there didn't seem to be a lot of solutions for. So I decided I wanted to kind of take a run at what we knew about long COVID and start the process of drug discovery, because discovering and developing new drugs for new diseases, it takes like 10 or 15 years to get all the way through clinical trials and really take a drug to market. So it was something that is like, well, okay, it's time. Let's get started on this. So I went into the literature and I really started looking at long COVID. And I was, what I like to do, because I'm actually, my degrees are in chemistry. I'm trained as a chemist. So I look at even at biology in the body, I look at it more from a chemical point of view. I wanted to look at mechanisms behind long COVID of what's going on in the body. What dysfunction is it causing? What's causing the symptoms? What are the mechanisms behind those? And I started looking at all that information with an eye towards finding molecular targets and getting started on drug discovery. And I went into the literature, I spent a long time in the literature, and I started looking around. And after I got through everything that I found and was looking at in my normal process, I was kind of both surprised and I was shocked, and I was a little frustrated and honestly a little angry, because what I found in the literature was there was a ton of papers being published on both COVID and on long COVID, ton of grant money going into it, right? Everybody in the long COVID patient population really needs help. They're demanding a lot of research. But when you look at the research, there was not a lot of focus on putting the pieces together in a coherent way to try to move in the direction of being able to develop new drugs. Everybody is kind of researching. If they worked on neuroinflammation before COVID, they're now looking at neuroinflammation in long COVID and what's causing that and publishing a lot on that. And that's a lot of foundational work. And I don't mean to criticize the scientific community at large too much, but we're treating this like we do a normal disease, where we're taking our time and we're not doing it quickly and we're not doing it in a focused way. And that's not what I wanted to do, because people with long COVID kind of need help now. There's not a whole lot to help them. I wanted to try and move the ball forward faster. So at the end of the day, when I got done in the literature, it's like, well, there's not a project here for me right now. There was not a good starting point for me in my lab, my academic lab, to start trying to work on drug discovery. So I kind of took a step back and I said, well, what do we know? What's the best out there that we have? And I found there's a great group of scientists that are working on something called the microclots hypothesis. And this is this hypothesis, which we can talk about in detail, that the one of the causative mechanisms of long COVID is that viral proteins are causing the formation of these microclots, and that the microclots actually are kind of the causative mechanism for long COVID, and that most of the downstream symptoms are a result of the effects physiologically of microclots. So that was kind of my starting point, and where I dove in and went down that kind of rabbit hole of mechanism. And again, it took me kind of an unexpected place. So we can talk about wherever you want to start with all that, because I know it's a lot.
So first, describe for our listeners, describe long COVID. What is long COVID? How is it presenting in people? Who is it presenting in? Where are you seeing it the most? Like, give everybody a little bit of a background on that, because a lot of times some people kind of sort of know, or they're hearing things, like the buzz of it, but what is it really?
So long COVID is a really frustrating condition for most people. So there are some official definitions of it that are not very satisfying and still make it kind of hard to diagnose. So generally, long COVID occurs, the criteria is like 3 to 6 months past your acute COVID infection. So you get COVID, you get mostly better. Like, a lot of people don't 100% recover. And then in somewhere past 3 to 6 months after getting an acute COVID infection, you actually start to feel worse and get worse again, but you get some different symptoms, right? An acute COVID infection, most of us have had one by now. We know what the symptoms are. It's the high fever. It's the flu-like symptoms. Like, when I had it, I couldn't even get out of bed and stand up. Like, it was bad, right? Everybody kind of is familiar with the acute COVID infection symptoms. So you get better, and then this time period after that, and the diagnostic criteria is symptoms that persist beyond 3 to 6 months. Okay, so you
And what
get
are
worse
some of those
again,
symptoms, right? So.
right? And those symptoms are, they're fatigue, they're what people call brain fog. So mental clarity type issues. There's typically some cardiac involvement, shortness of breath, either just like constantly or with like even minimal activity, shortness of breath. There can be issues with regulating heart rate, so tachycardia, rapid heart rate that is kind of uncontrolled. And what makes long COVID really difficult is the symptoms are, they're more like a syndrome. There's a large variety and a kind of a constellation of symptoms. And I kind of differentiate in between the core symptoms and then the constellation of symptoms that some people get, some people don't, right? The core ones are that fatigue, the brain fog, and usually some type of cardiac issue. Maybe not the same extent of cardiac issue for everyone, but some kind of cardiac involvement. And then beyond that, you get things like POTS, the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, where like when you move, you stand up, you get tachycardic, your heart rate shoots up. Things like dysautonomia, which is dysfunction in the autonomic nervous system, which controls your heart rate, your BP, your respiration, all that good stuff. The best that's best characterized as people talking about a difficulty to be able to like even stay standing, right? That's one of the classic kind of hallmarks of dysautonomia. More neurological issues like anxiety and depression as well. Those are all in the constellation of symptoms. Things like feeling like you're aging faster, hair loss, like just skin issues, a tightness to the skin, feeling like you've aged more years than it's been, right? Since you got sick, things like that. And when people with long COVID often have what's called post-exertional malaise or PEM, where when they go and do an activity, they crash really hard afterwards, and it can take like multiple times the amount of time to recover than what they put into doing the activity. So if they go and take a walk for an hour, they might be down for the rest of the day and part of the next day in order to recover. So it's this large constellation of symptoms that span multiple physiological systems in the body, which is one of the reasons the physicians have issues diagnosing it, right?
Yep.
There's no clinical laboratory tests for it. When the physicians will run clinical laboratory tests, everything comes back and it looks like you're fine, which is extraordinarily frustrating for people with long COVID. So the physicians, a lot of them don't know what to do with it, and people get passed from specialist to specialist trying to find answers, and they have difficulty because they can't.
Absolutely. So now the why. So I can totally attest to all of this. This is where being in the pharmacy setting until just a few months ago through all of this and seeing people coming in with all of those complaints you just said with no answers from Western medicine other than clinically you look fine. And this is where my functional medicine business is booming because people are coming to me and they're like, I just need answers. I feel like garbage. All of those symptoms you just said, whether it's, they're losing all of their hair, they can't get through the day without, some kind of stimulant, depending on, and they still are feeling like garbage, whether their anxiety is through the roof, all of what you just mentioned, but they're clinically fine. So bringing us back to why, what actually is happening to the body? When we are, and we can dive into too on COVID. I mean, I always tell patients too, because just from what I see, I don't research it on anywhere near a level that you research it. I kind of just go by what I'm visually seeing from my patients, both in the pharmacy and in my functional medicine practice. But looking at it from a standpoint of it doesn't matter whether they had COVID or whether they had terrible COVID, whether they tested positive for COVID because their family members had it, but their symptoms were meh, whether they were on their deathbed in bed for 3 days, or whether they were vaccinated and never saw positive, a positive test. All the same, people are coming with these symptoms. And why? What is happening to the body when they are getting COVID? What is happening with, what are spike proteins and why, how are they affecting people?
So, and this is the great, really crazy thing about long COVID is people have gotten long COVID since late 2020, right? The first incidences of it. So people have been getting long COVID since before the vaccine was out. People get COVID, and then pretty much the research is showing that you have about a 1 in 10 chance of getting long COVID every time you get a COVID infection, acute COVID infection. So that's kind of a not a very comforting thought. And people that are both vaccinated and non-vaccinated get long COVID. So it's from a causation effect, it's kind of all over the place. Like nothing seems to protect anyone, and everyone seems to be at risk. So the spike protein is one of these proteins that's on the outside of the COVID virus, right? And when you get an acute COVID infection, you presumably breathe in viral particles. They get into the lung tissue. The spike protein is the protein that actually binds to the ACE2 receptor in the lungs and helps with viral uptake. It's kind of on the outside, which is, and it sticks out from the virus. That's why they call it the spike protein. So long COVID at the most generalized level seems to be caused by what people call viral persistence. So there's either some persistence of virus itself somewhere in the body, And that can be in the bloodstream, it can be in an organ, it can be in the brain if there's a lot of neuroinflammation. And actually, one of the places people talk about a lot for viral persistence is in the GI tract. And it's what the gut dysbiosis and the other symptoms come from, potentially that viral persistence in the GI tract. So if you have long COVID, you likely have some viral persistence, and then it's these proteins, either from intact virus or protein fragments that have kind of been shed off the virus. The spike protein is sitting there circulating in the blood. And the thought behind the microclot hypothesis is that the spike protein itself binds to the proteins in the blood that cause clots. And when the spike protein binds to these clotting proteins, it causes a change in conformation that results in this unnatural folding and unnatural conformation of these clotting proteins. And that's what kind of they amalgamate, they get bigger, and they form these unnatural microclots in the bloodstream. They're sticky. They stick to platelets, they stick to other proteins, they stick to all kinds of molecules in the blood. And then downstream, that's what causes oxygen deprivation from the tissues, which is what causes the fatigue, right? Causes oxygen deprivation on low levels to the brain. That's what causes the brain fog, right? And there's a role for when microclots form, you get platelet hyperactivation. One of the biggest stores of serotonin in the body are platelets. And when they get activated, they dump all their serotonin, and you end up with serotonin depletion, which contributes to the CNS effects like the anxiety, the depression. The microclots are obviously circulating through the bloodstream. They're affecting the endothelium, the inside lining of the bloodstream. That's causing all kinds of inflammation effects. They're interacting with the immune system, right? And they're causing all these immune effects. They can be causing autoantibodies, maybe potentially even the mast cell activation, all those types of things. And then obviously the cardiac effects can also be caused by these microclots in circulation, the shortness of breath, the tachycardia issues. It all can be tied back to the microclots.
Wow, it's so fascinating. And I have to say I've seen this on so many levels. I'll even take it down to, just patients coming in, and I mean, just plethora of health issues over the past, 4 years. And even down to, I remember one, she was actually an employee, and she was a healthy 50-something-year-old woman, and 3 times she was rushed to the hospital with a cardiac event, like felt like she was literally dying from a heart attack. And I think 2 of the times were literally by ambulance. And when she got to the hospital, like, you're nothing's wrong, like you're clinically fine. All of these sudden deaths that are happening, whether it's children playing sports, I don't know what. Is this something that could potentially, if whether people were had COVID vaccination, whatever, is this something that could be contributing? And then when their deaths are explained as just cardiovascular, but it just doesn't make sense that this is happening to so many people of all ages. And it seems like they're not in the normal standard age of people that would have a cardiovascular attack, somebody that's, maybe over the age of 65, let's just say. We're seeing it more in like a teenage population and people into their, 40s, 50s, 60s, like even more so in that middle range, like 30s, 40s, 50s, kind of. Like, is this something that, is this something that could absolutely be related to COVID?
So, and I think based on intuition as a clinician, intuition as a scientist, it's obviously that's the next question you want to ask, right? And one of the interesting things is it's not a question we're answering very well in the scientific literature, which I find annoying, and it is part of the reason I kind of went a non-traditional route with my work, is we're not answering a lot of those questions in the actual scientific literature, right? We do know that spike protein itself has toxicity to heart tissue, right? That there are studies out there showing that the spike protein itself is a pretty pretty bad actor, but especially in the vascular system. It also causes a lot of inflammation and a lot of damage to the endothelial system, right? So if you take those and you add in the microclotting effects, it is reasonable. It's a reasonable hypothesis. That's usually the way I say it, because that's what it is at this point. It's like, okay, we've observed A and B. Does A cause B? It's a reasonable question to ask. It's a good hypothesis, right? It's a hypothesis we have to explore and try and find the answers to. And with your coworker that goes to the hospital feeling a heart attack, and the issue is you can't really detect microclots in standard blood work, right? So there is the really good scientific team that is working on the microclots hypothesis. They have a research laboratory assay they can do to see microclots in people's bloodstreams. But it's not a clinical test a physician or a hospital can order. It's really a research lab test, because you have to do it by microscopy to actually visualize the clots. You can't it I think they're working on technology to try and automate it and put it into more widespread use. But at this point, it's a very low access and it's a low throughput type assay. So it's not surprising that people are having all these events and we don't really know what's going on, because we don't have the tools to really look at it, even when we're asking the questions, which we seem a little bit reluctant to do.
So, what's the difference when we talk about spike proteins that you get from COVID itself versus vaccination? Like it says right on, I think the last strew of, and it's not now, the newest line of vaccines are not, but the old one was actually called Spikevax. Like the name of it was Spikevax. Like what's the difference in the two? Like why would you want to put them in your body if they're causing clots?
I looked at this at one point. Now I don't remember. There's a little bit of difference in the sequence, right? I think particularly at the beginning and the ends of the protein, right? Because right, the vaccine is you're injecting mRNA, and the mRNA gets transcribed into protein in the body, right? So you're actually making a human protein. And I know they did some work. I know like they with the mRNA pieces, they use some unnatural mRNA nucleotides and nucleosides to make it more stable and do some of those things on that, the more the biological engineering side. But the actual sequence, I think, right, you have to make sure you're capturing enough of the sequence to be the good epitope to generate the antibody, right? Because that's what the vaccine's trying to do. But in so the viral Now, the viral spike protein is being encoded by the viral gene and is being made in the body when the virus replicates, right? So, to a certain extent, once you get a COVID infection, the virus is actually kind of making the spike protein by the same mechanism that the vaccine is, right? Because it's still human ribosome making spike protein. But I think there's some differences in sequence. I don't remember off the top of my head what exactly those are, though.
Okay, no worries. But what about, so if they're forming these spike proteins from a vaccination, can you have the same effects that you have from COVID? Does it still form the microclots?
Boy, I would love to know the answer to that question. Love to know the answer to that question.
Public visit.
And I've been looking for it and waiting for it. I've actually talked to a couple scientists that do that kind of work, because they've made references that they're doing that kind of study, and they're saying the study's not done yet and they haven't published it. Unfortunately, there is nothing in the literature yet that talks about whether spike protein from vaccination actually causes microclots. And I'm trying to think back to the microclot papers. They did not deconvolute and differentiate between based on vaccination status. So when they were doing the actual studies originally to look at microclots in long COVID patients, they were looking at both vaccinated and unvaccinated patients, and they saw them in both, right? So we don't get an indication from that as to whether it's net natural spike protein only that causes microclots, or whether spike protein from the vaccine can cause microclots. But again, it's a reasonable hypothesis, Right, because there's actually been a really good biophysics paper that came out a little bit earlier this year that really looked on a biophysical kind of structural level of spike protein interactions that cause ca and causing microclots. And so we know that the spike protein is the catalyst for forming these microclots. And it again, it's a reasonable hypothesis that it would happen regardless of origin of the spike protein. Because right now with long COVID, the hypothesis everybody kind of goes with is it's this viral persistence issue, that there's a viral reservoir somewhere in the body.
So I'm no vaccine expert. I have my doctorate in pharmacy, but I am not a vaccine expert in any way, shape, or form. But I mean, if I were just to use my logic as just a clinician, as a scientist, I mean, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't a vaccine, if it was to replicate something like all vaccines do, why wouldn't it do the same thing? Why wouldn't it? You know, I mean, again, question mark, question mark, question mark, right? But it just kind of makes you think, And then there's also the, you know, COVID was so tricky when it came to something like we never saw before, where, you know, one family member would get it and, you know, it'd be a family of four and two of them would be out for the count. Two of them would be perfectly fine. Everybody tested, maybe three were positive and one wasn't. And, you know, some were symptomatic, some were asymptomatic. But assuming the asymptomatic people were exposed and tested positive, whether they tested or not, those people were still exposed to the virus and could still have long COVID, right? Even if they didn't get symptomatic COVID.
So it appears, and another thing, and again, it's science has been a little slow really publishing the data, but for especially for long COVID, there seems to be a trend where people with kind of more stressed or a poor immune system seem to be more at risk for long COVID, right? So if people had any kind of pre-existing autoimmune condition, people had just were had a chronic lifestyle where their immune system was not in good shape. And the one that really put it over the edge for me for really understanding that there's an immune system and an energetic issue that puts people at risk for long COVID is there's a subpopulation of long COVID people that before they got COVID and long COVID, they were like high performance athletes, super fit, super active, people that were running multiple miles a day, marathon runners, triathletes. There's a almost a disproportionate amount of them in the long COVID population, which doesn't make sense unless you think of it from the immune system in an energetic point of view, right? Because when you're training really hard in for those types of athletes, it puts us a lot of stress on the immune system and it drains them energetically, right? In terms of thinking about mitochondrial function, right?
100%,
And
yep.
I think that's probably what put them at higher risk and why they're almost overrepresented in the long COVID population, you know, and they have particular issues. They're particularly frustrated because like they're these super fit, super healthy people that are used to having these active lifestyles. Nothing stops them. And then they get long COVID and it puts them down with the fatigue and the brain fog and everything else. And it's particularly devastating for them.
Yes, and like you just said, that's what I feel like there is no rhyme or reason. I have talked to tens of thousands of people in the past 4 years, I'm going to say, vaccinating people and doing clinics. And I mean, this has just been what we have done in the pharmacy space. I'm no longer in the pharmacy space, but I've heard a lot of stories. I've heard a lot of symptoms. And anytime I've tried to rationalize or make sense out of it, it's like you can't because of like what you just said. It's like nobody's invincible. It seems like some of these younger athletes that, like you just said, were in tip-top shape did poorly and are having this long COVID. And there's like 85-year-old ladies that are frail and have, you know, 10 health conditions and are completely fine. It's like they got COVID and nothing, you know, nothing. So, you know, it's absolutely, I can see, I mean, I see it all the time with people being frustrated, But I mean, that just moves us on to solutions, right? So,
Right.
you know, for me, when I'm working with patients and I'm excited to talk about, you know, what you've discovered with my patients and we start to dive in, it's always looking at the root cause. So, you know, when we talk about the immune system, we know that 70 to 80% of the immune system lives in the gut, right? You know, when we're talking about neurotransmitters and the gut brain access, you know, 90% of your body's serotonin is produced and housed in the gut along with the other neurotransmitters and conversion. So looking at all these things and looking at gut health and you know, what I see with patients, whether it's like you said, there's no lab I can run on my patients to say, let's see if you have long COVID. We can only speculate from symptoms, but I can run other functional labs on patients. And it's like almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like I can run labs on patients and I can look for heavy metals and mold and parasites. I can look for nutrient deficiencies. I can look for mineral imbalances. I can look for hormonal imbalances. I can look for neurotransmitter imbalances. All these labs that are not available in Western medicine, we can take a functional approach to it, right? And I'm seeing all of these things, right? So, like the first place that I go when I'm working with my patients, the first place I go is the gut. And then that's almost a close second tied is the liver, the stagnancy in the liver, congestion in the liver. And a lot of times, and I, it's, you know, we live in a very toxic world, right? We have all of these toxins from the air we breathe, the water we drink, all of the pesticides, chemicals, another podcast for another time. But looking at all of that exposure, we see this with people, and then we see long COVID. So the first place I always go when people have these symptoms, and they're always, you know, the chronic fatigue, the brain fog, anxiety, insomnia, hair loss, weight loss resistance. These are like the big things that everybody's coming with. It's like, okay, I'm clinically fine, but I'm not. So this is where I dive in and I start to work on the gut and repairing, you know, like I said, nutrient deficiencies, repairing the immune system, boosting the immune system, you know, and trying to find that balance in people. And a lot of times it's successful, but it's a long process. You know, like we discussed, it's a frustrating process because it's, you know, sometimes people don't want to spend the time or the money running labs and really diving in. And it's almost like, well, just like in Western medicine, we need to see what we're looking at if we want to fix it, right? And like you were saying, there's no data. We can't, well, you said the one lab that you can see where, you know, spike proteins, but other than that, there's not really much to look at. So, you know, so that's where I start when I'm working with my patients and really just going by, you know, if they whether they're running labs, treating what we see, or even just going on their subjective, you know, symptoms that they have, and we work on, you know, little by little moving the needle to, you know, to the direction of, you know, a healthy gut, a healthy immune system. So talk about your findings and how you work with your patients.
So I don't work with patients, right? I'm just a scientist, so I'm not a clinician. So when I was looking at the microclot hypothesis, I'm was looking for causative mechanisms as well, right? Because that's I'm not a big fan of looking at symptoms, especially now with what we can do at science. If we're gonna find a molecular target and develop something, we might as well go for root causes and not just symptoms, right? So if you think about microclots as a causative mechanism behind long COVID, so one of the investigators that worked a lot on the microclot hypothesis, they actually took it far enough. They ran a small trial on about 90 long COVID patients, and they looked at their they found, they worked with a clinician, a physician, found people that had long COVID, took those people, actually looked at them to see whether they had microclots in their blood, and they all did. And then they ran a small trial where they treated them with a pharmaceutical cocktail called triple anticoagulant therapy, to see if they could resolve the microclots. And of the 90 or so patients in that study, about 80% of them recovered from long COVID.
Wow.
Including at the end of the study, they reran the test for microclots, and the people that recovered, their microclots were gone.
That's
Right.
awesome.
So that's pretty good data. Again, it's a small study. They've only published the preprint so far. I think they're having trouble with the powers that be, probably getting that one study published, right?
I can
And it was,
imagine, yes.
to be fair, the criticism is that it was probably underpowered in terms of the sample size in the study. But to me, that was a pretty good starting point. The issue, so if you want to think about triple anticoagulant therapy working to help people with long COVID, there's three issues with using that particular pharmaceutical cocktail for long COVID. One, you're giving people three anticoagulants. There's a significant safety issue of the potential side effect of bleeding, right? Because you're on three anticoagulants at the same time. So that's not an insignificant risk on that kind of cocktail. Physicians are going to want to monitor you for clotting and do a whole bunch of other stuff because again, that's not really there's that's not something you would send somebody home saying, okay, this is safe enough to just go take, right? So there's a safety issue. Because of that, the physicians didn't really want to prescribe it to the long COVID community. I heard this a lot from long COVID patients where the physicians were just reluctant to do it, mainly because of the safety issue, but also because it was a small trial and there was no large placebo-controlled randomized clinical trial, right, to show that it really worked in long COVID. And that's what the physicians want to see now before they do anything. And also there was a third issue of these drugs aren't cheap. And a lot of times the pharmaceutical industry, or sorry, the insurance companies won't cover those pharmaceuticals because they're not approved for that indication, right? They're not approved for long COVID. So those three issues kind of created a significant barrier to people with long COVID being able to get the one thing that seems to show some promise to help with long COVID. So I kind of seeing that was the situation, what it seemed like people needed was a safer, over-the-counter version of triple anticoagulant therapy that was affordable. So the way I was trained and early in my career, I used to take natural products and then develop those into drugs. As the natural product is the starting point, developing hits and leads from those. So I kind of looked at the landscape of what was going on. I said, well, why don't I just flip the process around? And basically I reverse engineered the pharmaceutical drug cocktail through their mechanisms of action in the body to natural ingredients. And so basically each pharmaceutical drug figured out what the safer, less potent, but safer and readily available natural ingredient would be. And I custom formulated an over-the-counter supplement that people could take to help them try to recover from long COVID. And in doing that, right, that's different than all of my academic projects, right? So I kind of went down that rabbit hole and formed a company and actually got the custom formulated supplement manufactured. And I've made it available for people with long COVID to buy it and try it to see if it could help. And the important things for me was that it's really safe. All the ingredients in it are super safe. We're using really high quality organic ingredients. It's made under GMP conditions. It's third party tested. So it's safe. It's over the counter. You don't need your physician to prescribe it. You can actually, look at all the information. If you want to try it, you can, and it's affordable. And those were kind of the three really important things to me to try and help people with long COVID.
That's incredible. So, and I spoke wrong and said your patients, more patient cases, I should say. But in your, so where is this product available to people? Like, are people giving you feedback on it? How is it doing? What kind of results? What are people, the symptoms that all we've been talking about? Like, how are people getting it and taking to it?
So I'm selling it on my company website. You can either go to CircuGuard.com. That's what I called the product, CircuGuard, or you can go to KeithCEllisPhD.com, and that has the link to the product. It also has my Substack. When I was doing all the research and figuring out microclot hypothesis and designing the product, I published everything on Substack so that everybody can go and read it, and it's openly available to people. And all my social media is there too. I've made a lot of videos on a lot of these topics. So I'm selling it, and people can get it and try it. And the people in my audience are having a lot of success with it. People are telling me it almost immediately helps with the brain fog and helps with the fatigue. They're getting a boost in being much more able to be active, right? They're regaining some daily function that a lot of people with long COVID don't have. They're telling me it also does help with a lot of the cardiac symptoms, the shortness of breath. And I've even had a couple people tell me that it helps me with some of the more severe symptoms like the dysautonomia and the POTS, which was a little bit of a surprise, right? Because, right, the supplement's not as potent as the pharmaceutical cocktail, right? So I figured at the end of the day, it was going to help people, but it might not completely clear everything, or you'd have to take it for an extended period of time to really clear all of the microclots. But people seem to be having a lot of success with it, helping them get over some of their long COVID symptoms and being able to get back to more of a regular life and not feeling so drained and sick and spending most of their day in bed.
That's awesome. All of the work that you're doing is fantastic. We could probably have five more podcasts on different topics that we could go down rabbit holes on. It's you've taught me a lot. Fascinating. I think it's important for people to understand what's going on because a lot of people don't understand the concept of it and why they feel like this. And although there's not exactly clear data, there's still, I think this is very beneficial for people. So I thank you so much for sharing all this wonderful information. And then, of course, in the show notes, we'll have information that people can go on to purchase. We can have the link. You can send that over and we'll have that in your show notes for people to purchase.
That's great. And my big thing is somebody has to be helping people with long COVID. I think pharmacists are doing a lot of that work because people are not getting as much help from the physicians as they want and they need, because the physicians just don't know what to do and there's not a lot of options. So the long COVID people, they're ending up with the pharmacists, they're ending up in the functional medicine space. And we have to be developing solutions to help people. And it's interesting, you talked about gut, kind of the GI tract and the gut issues. That's actually the next thing that I'm working on that hopefully we'll have something for next year, is some of those the gut issues that are associated with long COVID.
I love it. That's awesome. We'll have to podcast when that comes out.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Keith. It was a pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you for all this great information. And everybody can get in touch with Keith. We'll have information on contact and how to purchase Circuguard. Thanks so much for being on today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for listening to the Balanced Wellness Solutions podcast. Please leave a 5-star review if anything in this show spoke to you, or share this show with a friend to spread the word and help others find the balance they may also be searching for. Make sure to follow along with me on LinkedIn or Instagram at Dr. Courtney with a K, Ciccoletti, or check out my website at www.wellness-solutions.co to find out how we can possibly work together. Be well.